It is now a matter of life and death for many of these children who are severely acutely malnourished.
G20 pledges billions for Afghanistan to avert catastrophe. It's Thursday, October 14th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Mimi Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Holocaust survivor dies in Australia. Implementing a global corporate minimum tax. Nurse nominated for local COVID Hero Award. Animals in American zoos to get COVID jab. Hollywood's Captain Kirk of Star Trek fame blasts into space. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Members of the G20 group of industrialized nations have pledged billions of dollars in aid to prevent a catastrophe in Afghanistan following an emergency meeting this week. Henry Ridgewell reports for VOA.
Winter is fast approaching in Afghanistan and temperatures are falling. Aid agencies say millions of people need urgent assistance. Salam al-Janabi works for the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, in Afghanistan.
We are expecting around 3 million children to suffer from acute malnutrition, amongst them a million who will be literally fighting for their lives as they need treatment for severe acute malnutrition.
The United Nations says Afghanistan needs billions of dollars to rescue its economy and avert a catastrophe. Members of the G20 held an emergency virtual meeting Tuesday to discuss the crisis. Summit host, the Italian Prime Minister Mario Draghi, said it is the first time that leaders have given a multilateral response to the Afghan crisis. A consensus was found for the need for Afghanistan not to be allowed to return to being a kind of refuge for international terrorists. The European Union pledged $1.2 billion for Afghanistan and its neighbours. The aid will be channeled through international organizations working on the ground. The United States has already pledged $330 million so far this year. President Joe Biden told the G20 meeting that aid money should not be given to the Taliban. Germany's leader said there can be no recognition of the militant group as long as it denies basic rights to women and girls. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said, "I have said this very clearly, as have many others. The Taliban government is not inclusive. That is why the issue of recognizing the Taliban is not on the agenda. Nevertheless, there must and should be talks, as are now increasingly taking place." The Taliban said Tuesday the international community should normalize relations. Acting Foreign Minister Amir Khan Muttaqi said all options of force and pressure were used, but to no avail. Now we have to use the options of negotiation and understanding. For ordinary Afghans, life is getting harder. There is a desperate shortage of cash. Many businesses have closed, leading to job losses. Salaries are not being paid. The price of basic goods has increased sharply, the result of years of conflict and severe drought. Again, Salam al-Janabi of UNICEF.
It is now a matter of life and death for many of these children who are severely acutely malnourished. So what we hope for within the humanitarian community, within UNICEF, is that the humanitarian aid provided to families, children and mothers is depoliticized. That we first look at the humanitarian imperative, the urgent needs of these children, firstly, and then try and figure out the larger systems and how they will work.
Taliban and Western government officials are holding talks in Qatar on allowing aid into the country and letting refugees out. Meanwhile, G20 leaders are due to meet again face-to-face in Rome at the end of the month. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Storm leaves 11 dead in landslides, floods in Philippines. U.S. affirms need for counterterrorism, humanitarian assistance in Afghanistan. Real estate debt crisis and energy shortage threaten China's economic growth. Covering Myanmar is becoming impossible, say local journalists. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Tributes are being made for Eddie Jaku, one of the last remaining survivors of Auschwitz, who died in Australia at the age of 101. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
Eddie Jaku described himself as the happiest man on earth. In fact, that was the title of his best-selling autobiography, which was released when he was 100 years old. Friends and family remember a man who they say lived a remarkable life. He was born Abraham Jakubowicz in Leipzig, Germany, to a Jewish family. He was 18 years old when he was sent to the first of four concentration camps, which included Auschwitz, where the Nazis murdered his parents in the gas chambers. Jaku was spared because of his engineering skills. He wrote that the camp was a living nightmare. In 1945, Soviet forces moved closer to Auschwitz as the war neared its end. The camp was evacuated and prisoners were forced on notorious death marches. Jaku eventually escaped and hid in a cave, eating slugs and snails to survive. He was seriously ill when he was later rescued by American soldiers, but he recovered and moved to Australia in 1950. After the Second World War, about 27,000 survivors of the Holocaust migrated to Australia. Jaku became a volunteer at the Sydney Jewish Museum, sharing his story with visitors. Aviva Wolf, the museum's operations manager, told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that Jaku was an inspiration.
He came out with such positivity. He always had time for everyone. He always had a smile on his face. You know, at 101, he drove himself to the museum, and I literally daily get postcards, letters, emails, people just wanting to tell Eddie how he's touched their lives, changed their lives.
In 2013, Jaku was awarded the Medal of the Order of Australia, a prestigious civic award for his service to the Jewish community. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said Jaku was an inspiration and a joy. The New South Wales Jewish Board of Deputies said he'd been a beacon of light and hope. Jaku died at a nursing home in Sydney. He survived by his wife of 75 years, Floor, their two sons, four grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. Despite the trauma and brutality he'd witnessed, he retained a positive outlook and spread messages of peace and forgiveness. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, when it comes to enacting a 15% global corporate minimum tax, it may be a long road ahead. Technical details still need to be worked out, and it would be at least 2023 before it could be implemented. Making headlines in Asia, Hong Kong battened down for the second time in less than a week Wednesday as Typhoon Kompasu brought heavy rains to the region. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're so glad you decided to join us on VOA Asia. A global deal to ensure large multinational companies pay a minimum tax rate of 15% and make it harder for them to avoid taxation has been recently agreed upon by 136 countries.
But as VOA's chief White House correspondent Patsy Wadakaswara reports, the world has a long way to go before the deal is implemented.
After 4 years of negotiations led by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, last week 136 countries agreed on a sweeping overhaul of international tax rules. One, a minimum global corporate tax rate of 15% for companies with annual revenues of more than $870 million. Two, that large multinational companies must pay taxes where they operate, not just where their headquarters are. The deal is supported by the Biden administration. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
The international agreement is proof that the rest of the world agrees that corporations can and should do more to help build back better.
Proponents say the agreement would reverse a decades-long race to lower corporate tax rates that have encouraged companies to shift profits to low-tax jurisdictions, depriving nations of funding to combat global health crises and build new infrastructure. But technical details have yet to be finalized. Kyle Pomerleau is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute.
It remains to be seen how successful the implementation will be and how this will really end up impacting global tax revenues and corporate profit shifting.
It would be at least 2023 before the deal could be implemented. Some signatories, including China and Ireland, want to protect current tax incentives. Daniel Bunn is vice president of global projects at the Tax Foundation.
It's also clear that many countries, particularly developing countries, are interested in continuing these negotiations once this version of the deal has been agreed to be able to say, okay, there's been progress made here, there's some changes made, but we would like to go further and open up another conversation in 2023.
OECD estimates the minimum tax rule will generate $150 billion in additional global tax revenues annually. But large multinational companies like Amazon can still take advantage of the many exemptions, and the deal simply doesn't go far enough, say advocates for global equality, including Oxfam. Didier Jacobs is Oxfam's senior policy advisor.
Down the line, the global minimum tax should normally decrease tax havens abuse, and that will benefit all countries. But the immediate and tangible benefits from the tax in the short term will be really collected by rich countries only, almost all of them.
The U.S. Congress would need to approve legislation to implement the global tax deal. Republicans have threatened to block it. Patsy Wadakaswara, VOA News.
Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. South Korea established a panel on Wednesday to debate a strategy on how to live with COVID-19 in the long term as the country seeks to phase out coronavirus restrictions and reopen the economy amid rising vaccination levels. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. When the COVID pandemic hit the United States, Lee Harper Chen, an ICU nurse and mother of two, decided to provide information about the new virus, its treatments and prevention measures, in a special Facebook group. Her efforts were noticed in her community. Lili Anisimov met with Lee to talk about her efforts in this story narrated by VOA's Anna Rice.
When the coronavirus pandemic hit the U.S., ICU nurse Lee Harper Chen dedicated her time to helping her community in Arlington, Virginia, even after long, exhausting shifts.
I was scared, and I thought, let me fight my fear with facts. Let me find good information to share, and that way not only can I conquer my fear, but I can help educate others.
Harper Chen became an active member of a local Arlington Facebook group, where she shared news and updates about the new coronavirus and fought disinformation. Her efforts got the attention of local residents who nominated her for Arlington County's Community COVID-19 Hero Award.
Arlington has done such an exceptional job in demonstrating that resiliency and banding together to take care of one another. I mean, like I said, the 122 nominations, and you can see there's at least three or four people who have just gotten dozens of nominations, including Lee Harper Chen.
Harper Chen, who spent so many months taking care of patients at work and her family at home, says she contracted the virus at work.
I got COVID at my hospital. I did not get it from a patient. I got it from another nurse. That was a scary time. I had to isolate away from my two little children for 22 days. After I felt well enough, I would come outside and sit in the driveway and watch my children play. I would watch them out the window at first, but then when I was well enough to sit up, I would come sit outside.
I remember when she was really sick and she just stayed in her room the entire time, and I never really got to see her.
Her family worried about her continuing to work.
Almost a year after I recovered, they would get nervous if I would leave.
Like many other heroes during the COVID pandemic, Harper Chen has a stethoscope for a wand and scrubs for a cape. Residents say her main weapon is love and dedication to her family, to her community, and to her every patient. For Lilia Anisimova in Arlington, Virginia, Anna Rice, VOA News.
In other news, the United States will reopen its land borders to non-essential travel next month, according to the Biden administration, ending a 19-month freeze due to the COVID-19 pandemic. International visitors will be required to be vaccinated against the coronavirus. Vehicle, rail, and ferry travel between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico has been largely restricted to essential travel, such as trade, since the beginning of the pandemic. The rules announced this week will allow fully vaccinated foreign nationals U.S. entry regardless of the reason for travel. That process will get underway in early November, when a similar easing of restrictions will begin for air travel. Happening now in Asia, Chinese officials said Wednesday they can ensure homes in the country's north will be heated during the winter amid a nationwide electricity crunch that has brought power cuts in some areas. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, more than 70 zoos in the United States are gearing up to inoculate some of their animals against COVID-19 amid a rise in cases. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports on the vaccine's effectiveness for the animals and which species will get that first jab.
9 big cats at the Smithsonian's National Zoo tested presumptive positive for the virus that causes COVID-19 in September. Fortunately, they are now eating and behaving normally after receiving treatment for secondary bacterial infections, says the curator of large carnivores, Craig Saffo.
There's not a treatment for COVID itself. So our veterinarians started treating with antibiotics. There were pain meds given and anti-nausea and appetite stimulant.
How the felines got infected is still unknown.
The most likely scenario is that an asymptomatic staff member would have passed this along. It's an airborne virus, and so things do get out around your masks.
Other species, such as primates, are testing positive for COVID-19 in zoos across the U.S. The Washington, D.C. and Baltimore zoos are among those gearing up to use an available experimental COVID vaccine to boost the immunity of their at-risk animals. Cheetah are one of the endangered species that will get vaccinated against COVID-19 before the end of the year at the Maryland Zoo. It should be a smooth process, since many of the animals at this facility are already trained by technicians to receive injections on a routine basis. Ellen Bronson is the Senior Director of Animal Health Conservation and Research at the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore.
Something like a stick at first, or just push a little bit on the animal for some pressure, and then they move to something like a needle with a cap on it, and then they'll move up to an actual injection. So there are multiple steps to get them to the point that they're voluntarily training for that procedure.
The pharmaceutical company Zoetis is donating over 11,000 doses of its COVID-19 vaccine to zoos nationwide. The company says the vaccine has proven to be safe in dogs, cats, and minks, But since it hasn't been tested in zoo animals, it's hard to say yet if they'll be protected, particularly against the Delta variant, and for how long. Mahesh Kumar is Senior Vice President of Global Biologics at Zoetis.
Giving them two doses, you at least reduce the risk of exposure. The groups that receive the experimental vaccine have an obligation to report back to us and the USDA the disposition of those vaccines and what happened to those animals.
On October 7th, a snow leopard that had shown COVID-19 symptoms died at the Great Plains Zoo in South Dakota. A necropsy will determine the cause of death. Given the large number of visitors at zoos nationwide, questions have been raised over whether COVID-19 infections among the animals could pose a public health risk. Louis Shang is a professor of chemical virology at Cornell University.
Probably not, because the population is small, so the infection will self-extinguish, meaning the animals will recover or they will die. At the end of the clinical trial, if there are infections in unvaccinated zoos and not in vaccinated zoos, we will have some evidence of the potency of the vaccine.
Staffers at the Maryland Zoo are hopeful the vaccine will indeed provide an extra layer of protection against COVID-19. Especially for several species which are already listed as endangered.
Losing an animal in a zoo, there's always an impact. They're valuable to the breeding programs, they're valuable to the troop that they're in, the group that they're in, so obviously it would have a big impact on us.
Veronica Valeras Iglesias for VOA News at the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore.
Hollywood's Captain Kirk, 90-year-old William Shatner, blasted into space on Wednesday, reaching the final frontier aboard a rocket ship built by Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin company. Bezos is a Star Trek fan. The Amazon founder had a cameo as an alien in one of the later Star Trek movies, and Shatner rode free as his invited guest. Shatner and three fellow passengers, including former NASA engineer Australian Chris Boysen, soared to an estimated 106 kilometers above Earth in the fully automated capsule and then safely parachuted to the desert floor. In a flight that lasted about 10 minutes, William Shatner has become the oldest person to go into space. AP Entertainment correspondent Margie Zaraletta has more.
Command engine start. 2, 1.
William Shatner and three fellow passengers blasted off from West Texas to more than 66 miles into space as part of the Blue Origin flight. Shatner's claim to fame is playing Captain Kirk on Star Trek. Upon returning, Shatner was overcome as he thanked Blue Origin founder Jeff Bezos.
What you have given me is the most profound experience I can imagine. I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened.
Audio courtesy of Blue Origin. I'm Margie Zaraletta.
In other space news, Australia has agreed to build a 44-pound semi-autonomous lunar rover for NASA to take to the moon as early as 2026. The rover would collect soil that contains oxides, and NASA would use separate equipment to extract oxygen from that soil. Oxygen extracted from the lunar surface would ultimately be used to sustain a human presence on the moon and support future missions to Mars. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson says the agreement would strengthen a relationship with Australia related to space exploration that dates back more than 50 years. And finally, researchers at one of Switzerland's top universities are releasing open-source beta software that allows for virtual visits through the cosmos, including up to the International Space Station, past the moon, Saturn, or exoplanets, over galaxies and well beyond. The program, called Virtual Reality Universe Project, pulls together what the researchers call the largest data set of the universe to create three-dimensional panoramic visualizations of space. Software engineers and astrophysicists at the École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne devised the virtual map that can be viewed through individual VR gear, immersion systems like panoramic cinema with 3D glasses, planetarium-like dome screens, or on a PC for two-dimensional viewing. Think Google Earth, but for the universe. Computer algorithms produce terabytes of data in images that can appear as close as 1 meter or almost infinitely far away. The program aims to attract scientists looking to visualize the data they continue to collect, as well as members of the general public. You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Chris Cascao, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.